Mary had brown eyes and shoulder-length brown hair. Sharp pointed to the picture.
Does she look familiar, Lance?
Lance shook his head.
No.
Sharp wrote Mary's name above the picture.
Lance, why don't you call Frank? If finding her was this easy for us, then he probably already has her name.
Sharp went back to pacing as if physical movement jogged his brain. The ME didn't answer. Lance left a message, then set down his phone.
While we wait, we should conduct a thorough review of the file and make a list of people to locate and interview.
Sharp returned to the board.
Morgan, I want your eyes on this whole file. You're the one starting fresh with no pre-existing opinions.
If you don't mind, I'd like to copy the file for my grandfather as well, Morgan said. He has decades of experience and nothing but time on his hands.
I'd appreciate that.
Sharp started a new column entitled Interviews. Underneath, he listed Stan Adams and Brian Lead.
Vic worked for Upstate Insurance. The company went bankrupt in 2012. His boss's name was Phil Dreyer. Phil was a real company man. Stayed with the firm for his whole career. His last known address is in the file. There was also a secretary, Dorothy Finch. She was 60 years old in 1994 and retired when the firm closed. Last time I checked, she was living in a nursing home.
Lance worked on his laptop.
Stan and Brian still live in town. Their addresses haven't changed in the last 5 years. I found an obituary for Dorothy Finch. Phil Dreyer no longer lives at that address.
Under find, Sharp wrote, Phil Dreyer. As always, Morgan was making her own notes. What else did Vic do? He must have had hobbies, other acquaintances. Were he and Jenny socially active back then?
Stan and Brian were the full extent of Vic's social life.
Sharp said.
They played baseball and hung out at PJ's.
Is that the same PJ's that's on Fletcher Avenue? Morgan asked.
That's one.
Sharp nodded.
It's still in business, still owned by the same family.
Morgan turned to Lance. What do you remember of your dad's friends?
Not much,
Lance said.
Stan was single back then. Brian's wife's name was Natalie. Their kids were younger than me. Two were in diapers last time I saw them.
Lance shook his head, his mouth flattening as he remembered the sheer, stark loneliness after his dad went missing.
They didn't come around after my dad disappeared.
Sharp took a deep breath.
There were some things we've never talked about. At the time, you were just a boy. You had enough to cope with, and I didn't want to burden you. But now, if you really want to dig into your dad's disappearance, you'll need to prepare yourself for the less pleasant details.
Lance straightened. His gaze met Sharp's briefly before he nodded.
I knew you kept things from me, but I didn't want to hear the truth if there was no real chance of finding out what happened to him. But now there is, and it's time.
Over the years, he'd actively avoided learning more about the case. It was almost as if he knew the facts would change his memories of his childhood. No doubt he'd painted the period before his father vanished with a rose-colored brush. Understandable, since the years afterward had been hell.
All right.
Sharp took a deep breath.
Your father's friends, Stan and Brian, told me that Victor had been concerned about his wife's mental health. She'd already begun exhibiting signs of anxiety and depression. She was still teaching at the community college, but was struggling. They also said that your dad's company was having financial problems. He was worried about getting laid off. On top of all that, your mom's spending was getting out of control.
Lance digested the information. Bits of memory moved and clicked into place, like a Rubik's Cube.
So his disappearance didn't cause her illness? It didn't.
Sharp agreed.
But it sent her into a rapid downward spiral.
Given that information, the Krugers' marriage hadn't been the episode of Leave It to Beaver that Lance had always believed. Now that he thought about it, this version made more sense.
Stan and Brian said Vic was unhappy.
Sharp said.
He didn't know what to do about Jenny's problems. He was drinking too much.
Lance turned toward the board. Away from Sharp. He'd always known he didn't have the full scoop, but none of this explained how a young woman had ended up in the trunk of his dad's car.
"Let's divvy up our tasks,"
Sharp said.
"I'll search online records and the Social Security death master file for Vic's old boss, Phil Dreyer. I can also make a few calls and see if there are any good rumors floating around about the case."
Sharp knew everyone in local law enforcement who'd been on the job more than 5 years.
"We need fresh background checks on everyone involved, and we obviously can't ask Jenny to do them for us."
"I'll take care of those. I'm not as fast as my mom, but I can get the job done," Lance said.
"Someone needs to go down to the county clerk's office and check vital records. We need to find out if Phil is still alive. If he is, I want to talk to him. Maybe now that he no longer works for Upstate Insurance, he'll be more willing to share information than he was back then. I'd really like to know how precarious Vic's job really was. Phil would never give me a straight answer about the financial health of the company."
"Aren't vital records available online?" Morgan asked. "If he died, the county will have a death certificate on file."
"In Randolph County, you can request them online, but you might not receive them for a week, or a month, or ever,"
Sharp said. Morgan nodded. "I have to go to the courthouse to file a discovery motion for a DUI case I'm working on. It's Esposito's case, and the DA's office has been slow to send me information."
"What a jerk."
Sharp shook his head.
"Lance, go with Morgan to the courthouse. You can check vital records while she's filing her motion. I don't want her alone until her stalker is brought in."
Chapter 11. Morgan filed her discovery motion, then took the elevator to the ground floor and navigated the maze of hallways that led to the wing of the courthouse that housed the county clerk's office. Walking briskly, she turned down a corridor. A man stepped out in front of her and she bumped into him. She stumbled and dropped her tote. Thankfully, it was zipped and its contents remained secure. "I'm sorry." She drew back. Esposito. The last person she wanted to see. She stooped to recover her bag. "Standing," she said. "Excuse me." He blocked her path, hogging the hallway.
"You're always so focused. What are you doing here, Ms. Dane?"
She swallowed a smart retort. Antagonizing Esposito would not help matters, but his arrogant attitude slid under her skin like a big, fat splinter. Morgan settled for, "I'm in a hurry. Is there something you need to discuss?"
"You should check that attitude."
"I should check my attitude?" Esposito's black eyes went beady. He glanced up and down the hall and lowered his voice.
"You need my cooperation."
Morgan felt her eyebrows shoot up her forehead. What is it with this guy?
"I can make your life very difficult."
He leaned closer, too close. He needed a breath mint.
"We can do every single case the hardest way possible."
Enough was enough. Morgan put a hand 6 inches in front of her to keep him from leaning any closer. She hated games. She just wanted to do her job. "First of all, back off." He didn't. Instead, his eyes glittered with amusement as he shifted his weight farther forward until his chest pushed against her hand.
"You aren't a prosecutor now. You are a lowly defense attorney, a bottom feeder. Your clients are the scum of the earth."
"Like the innocent kid you tried to railroad into a plea deal?" His face reddened. "What do you want?" she asked, her temper running short.
"Don't ever go out of your way to try and make me look bad again."
Morgan stiffened her arm to resist the press of his body weight. "I didn't have to do anything. You made yourself look bad. Next time you want to push hard on a case, verify your evidence first. Bluffing is a gamble. Yours didn't pay off this time."
"I'm warning you, counselor."
"Warning me of what?" Morgan asked. She could not roll over for him. Her career would be over. "I take the law very seriously. My clients deserve the best defense I can give them. I will make you prove your case every single time." His lip curled away from his teeth.
here making a mistake.
He tried to take a step forward, to invade the last few inches of space between their bodies, but Morgan moved her hand into a horizontal position until the tips of her fingers aligned with the hollow at the base of his throat. His forward momentum pressed her fingers into his jugular notch. Her fingertips sank into the soft flesh. Gagging, he jerked backward.
You bitch!
A flash went off, followed by Lance's voice.
Hey, Esposito. Why are you practically standing on top of the lady? I hope to hell you're not trying to intimidate the defense counsel, because that's what it looks like in this picture.
Lance held his cell phone in front of him. His light tone did not match his angry scowl or the fingers that curled into a fist at his side. Still coughing, Esposito took a quick step away.
Miss Dane and I were simply discussing a case.
Morgan didn't respond. Normally, she kept a decent hold on her temper, but men like Esposito set her off. His boorish and clumsy efforts to intimidate stunned her. Why would he think he could get away with this sort of behavior? Did other people allow him to walk all over them?
You can discuss a case without breathing down her neck.
Lance stepped to her side, using his own size to his advantage. Esposito had tried to bully her, but he'd never try that sort of tactic with someone whose biceps were bigger than his head. Lance, in his tactical cargos and snug black t-shirt, did not look like someone to be messed with.
We'll talk later.
Esposito nodded and turned away. As he turned the corner, Morgan saw him rub the base of his throat. Thank you, she said, turning to Lance. Underneath the grim anger, humor lurked in his blue eyes.
You're welcome, though it looked like you had him under control.
He is such an
ass.
Lance finished. Yes. The encounter with Esposito had left a foul taste in her mouth. Lance squinted down the hall where Esposito had disappeared.
We need to learn more about the new ADA.
I'm sure he's been thoroughly vetted, Bryce is particular.
Still.
Lance frowned.
I don't like him.
Bryce is a politician. He barely won the election. He can't afford to hire anyone with a questionable history. Lance didn't look convinced. Morgan steered him toward the exit. Did you find Phil Dreyer?
I did.
Lance opened the door for her.
He's dead. There was an error on the death certificate. They used his middle initial instead of his full middle name.
That's why he didn't show up on the master death list. Then we can cross Phil off our list of potential witnesses. That leaves us with Stan, Brian, and Brian's wife Natalie to interview. If the skeleton's identity could be confirmed, the list would no doubt expand.
Yes,
Lance said. He led her across the parking lot and they got into his Jeep. After the doors were closed, Lance leaned over the console and kissed her.
Are you sure you're all right? I wanted to punch Esposito in his smug face.
I'm fine. I've visited violent criminals in prison. One ADA with the temperament of a seventh-grade bully isn't going to intimidate me.
Did you file your motion?
I did. Morgan fastened her seatbelt. But the frustrating fact is that he can make things more difficult. He can drag out the process. He can delay delivery of important materials so defense attorneys have as little time as possible to review discovery evidence. I'll push back. But that's extra time billed to my clients. Public defenders have made it worse. They juggle a crazy number of cases. They don't have time for unnecessary motions and bullshit stonewalling.
So his tactics will work.
Lance unlocked the glove compartment and removed their weapons. Guns were not allowed in the courthouse. She accepted her handgun and fastened the holster onto her belt. Yes, he'll win cases simply because public defenders are overworked. The entire legal system is overburdened. Additional paperwork will not help matters. Either his ego is overinflated or he's trying to prove himself with an aggressive conviction record. Morgan took a deep breath. There's nothing I can do about a difficult ADA. Where do we go from here?
We need to see the sheriff. The medical examiner hasn't returned my call, and we need to know the identity of the woman in my father's trunk.
Oh, goody. Someone else who's not happy with me.
Do you want me to drop you at the office?
Lance pulled out of the parking space. No, I want to go with you. Morgan settled into the seat. The sheriff isn't as bad as Esposito.
He's the exact opposite. Esposito wants to create extra legal steps. Sheriff King wants to skip as many as possible and send everyone to jail without passing go or collecting their $200.
Lance's phone buzzed. He looked at the screen.
Speak of the devil. It's King.
He answered the call.
Kruger.
Morgan couldn't make out the sheriff's words, but whatever he said wiped all traces of humor from Lance's face.
No, my mother doesn't leave her house. We'll have to go to her.
A few seconds later, he ended the call. His fingers tightened around the phone as if he wanted to crush it. What's wrong? Morgan asked. He shoved his phone in the console cup holder.
Sheriff King is on his way to interview my mother. I want to get there before him.
Lance pressed on the accelerator and the Jeep surged forward.
I wonder if this means they've identified the body.
Chapter 12. Lance sat across the kitchen table from his mother, relieved that he and Morgan had arrived before the sheriff. Dark circles hung beneath his mom's eyes and her skin was papery, as if she was dehydrated. He glanced up at Morgan.
Would you get her a glass of water?
Of course. Morgan filled a glass at the tap and brought it to the table. She sat next to his mother. Have you eaten lunch today, Jenny?
His mother nodded. Yes, I ate lunch at noon. Today is Tuesday. I had a tuna salad sandwich. Sheriff King is on his way here to ask you some questions about Dad. Before he gets here, I have some news for you.
Lance reached across the table and covered her hand.
The skeleton in Dad's trunk wasn't him. It belongs to a young woman.
Shock filled her face for a few seconds.
Why would a young woman be in your father's trunk? And where is he?
That's what we're all trying to find out.
Lance said.
Do you remember a woman by the name of...
The doorbell rang. Leaving Morgan with his mother, Lance went to the door and opened it. Sheriff King stood on the front stoop. Lance went out onto the step and closed the door behind him.
My mother suffers from acute anxiety and agoraphobia.
Lance cut straight to the bone.
She hasn't had a stranger in her house in years.
King nodded.
Noted.
Lance led the way into the house and back to the kitchen.
Mom, this is Sheriff King,
he said. In a gallant, old western gesture, the sheriff swept his hat from his head and held it in front of his chest.
Thank you for seeing me, ma'am.
The sheriff took the chair across from her. She shifted backward, her shoulders curling in. She glanced at the sheriff from behind a curtain of her white hair.
You look familiar. Have I seen you on TV?
The sheriff nodded.
I do press conferences, now and then.
You're here about Vic.
His mother clasped her hands together in her lap, her arms tight to her sides, as if she could physically hold herself together.
Yes, ma'am.
The sheriff's tone softened. Maybe he wasn't a total hard-ass.
When was the last time you saw your husband, Victor Kruger?
August 10th, 1994, she said.
And you've had no contact with him since? No phone calls, no emails, no letters?
His mother shook her head. Nothing.
Does the name Mary Fox ring a bell?
The sheriff asked. His mother frowned.
I don't think so.
This would have been from 23 years ago.
The sheriff clarified.
I can't say for sure. His mom said. I'm sorry.
The sheriff's upper body leaned an inch closer to the table.
Mary worked as a waitress in PJ's.
Lance stiffened. He'd been right. The remains were Mary Fox. His mother's brows dropped.
We used to go to PJ's for burgers. Vic went more often than I did. He'd stop to have a beer with Stan and Brian a few times a week.
Lance's brain whirled. His father had known the dead girl. Although the fact that she worked at his favorite restaurant meant that their connection could have been entirely innocent. The sheriff pulled a photo from his pocket and slid it across the table. His mother reached forward, her fingers touching just the edges as she slid it in front of her.
She looks familiar. Is this Mary?
Yes, the sheriff said. We pulled your husband's car from Gray Lake yesterday. I'm sorry I didn't visit you then. Lance told me it would be better if he notified you. I also wanted to verify if the remains inside were his or not.
Lance told me.
Her fingers curled on the table. Morgan took one of her hands and held it.
But it was Mary's skeleton that was found in the trunk of your husband's car.
Despite his polite tone, the sheriff studied her face, waiting for a reaction. But Lance's mom just blinked.
I don't understand. How did she get there? And where is Vic?
Her voice rose as confusion segued into distress.
That's what we want to find out, ma'am.
The sheriff tapped the photo.
The night your husband went missing, did he say anything about going to PJ's?
His mother shook her head.
No, he was going to the grocery store.
Did he have a cell phone?
The sheriff asked.
No.
His mom's fingers tightened on Morgan's, the knuckles whitening.
They were expensive back then. The coverage out here was so poor it wouldn't have been worth the expense. But Vic would have called me from PJ's if he was going to stop. He was good about not wanting me to worry.
She looked down and opened her grip, releasing Morgan's hand.
I've always been a worrier.
So he was considerate,
the sheriff said.
Vic was a good man.
A tear rolled down Jenny's cheek.
What did you do the night Vic went missing?
The sheriff asked.
When Vic didn't come home, I drove around looking for him. I called everyone I could think of, but no one had seen him.
She wiped the tear away.
Where is he?
I don't know yet, but I'm going to find out.
The sheriff assured her.
You can help me by giving me as much information as possible. Did Vic go anywhere regularly, except for PJ's?
I don't know.
His mother's hand shook harder. She started picking at the skin around her fingernails.
This is going to be a difficult question, and I'm very sorry for having to ask it.
The sheriff said, his voice gentle, even apologetic.
To your knowledge, did your husband ever have an affair?
Anger boiled in Lance's gut. At the same time, he understood the necessity of asking the question, so instead of punching the sheriff in the face, he gripped the table edge. His mother's head shook hard.
No, he would never have...
The sheriff rested his forearms on the edge of the table.
Did you receive any odd phone calls or hang-ups?
No,
Jenny whispered.
How much time did he spend at PJ's?
The sheriff asked. Jenny ripped a piece of skin from her finger. Blood welled.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
She repeated the phrase in a monotone, almost under her breath. The sheriff leaned back. His eyes flickered to Lance in question.
That's enough, Sheriff. My mother has had a great shock.
Lance stepped forward, but Morgan already had her arms wrapped around his mother's shoulders, and his mom was leaning into her. The sheriff got up, and Lance led him toward the door. They stepped out onto the front stoop.
Thank you for being considerate with her.
Lance pulled the door closed behind them. King nodded.
It wasn't something I wanted to do at all.
Since you gave us Mary's name, I assume you've notified her family.
This morning.
The sheriff nodded and blinked away. For a second, no longer. Regret crossed King's face. Lance had done death notifications in his years on the police force, mostly after car accidents. Telling someone their loved one had died was one of the worst duties a police officer performed. But the lapse in iron control only lasted a moment. The sheriff's jaw tightened and all traces of vulnerability disappeared.
I'll need to talk with your mother again.
If she's up to it.
Lance's mother came first, the investigation second.
As much as I want to find out what happened to my dad, I won't sacrifice my mother for answers to something that was over more than 20 years ago.
Every secret exposed required sacrifice. The only question was who was doing the sacrificing. Unless his mother was under arrest, she had no legal requirement to speak to King, though she would cooperate. She wanted answers. But could she afford to pay the price?
I understand your concern.
The sheriff jammed his hat on his head.
But this is a murder investigation. Mary Fox and her family deserve just as much respect as yours.
Lance had nothing to say. The sheriff was right. Sheriff King got into his vehicle and backed out of the driveway. Lance closed the door and returned to the kitchen. Mom was still in Morgan's arms. He crouched in front of them.
Mom, are you okay?
She drew in a quivering breath, then straightened. Don't blame the sheriff. He's doing his job, asking questions that need to be asked. His mother swiped a hand beneath her eye to catch a tear.
I can't believe Vic would have cheated on me.
His mother's gaze shifted to the kitchen window, but her focus was inward.
He loved me.
But Lance had already discovered his memories were less than accurate. Were his mother's equally faulty? If his mother had already begun her mental spiral in 1994, she might not have noticed if his father strayed. Her illness consumed her. It ate away at her interest in the outside world, taking giant bites and devouring them. Maybe his father had been lonely.
I'm going to call Kevin.
His mother stood. Her gaze landed on Morgan, then Lance.
Please find out what happened. Don't try and cover it up. I need to face the truth, no matter how difficult it might be.
She walked out of the kitchen, her gait slow, almost painful, as if she'd aged 20 years since the sheriff had arrived. Her office door closed with a soft click.
So far, I'm impressed with the way she's handling all this.
Lance stared at the empty doorway. She certainly seems determined, Morgan said. What now?
Now we find out everything we can about Mary Fox.
I'll call Sharp. Morgan pulled out her phone as they walked out of the house. She made the call while Lance locked the house. They climbed into the Jeep and Lance started the engine. Morgan ended the call. Sharp wants us to talk to Stan Adams and Brian Lead, but he wants to be in on the interview with Mary's mother. He says he'll meet us there later.
Okay.
Lance drove away from his mother's house, but he couldn't escape the uneasy feeling in his chest as he left her behind. Chapter 13. Should I call Stan and Brian? Morgan asked, checking the time on the dashboard. It's only 3 o'clock, they might be at work.
No.
Lance shook his head.
Let's surprise them. If they're not home, we'll come back. We can start with Stan, his house is the closest.
As he drove, Morgan read from her copy of Sharp's original interview notes and gave Lance the highlights. Stanley Adams is 58 years old. He's a founder of the accounting firm of Adams and Booker and a Scarlet Falls native. 10 years ago, he married Abigail Snyder. She's 36 years old. They don't have any children. Lance turned into a new development and parked in front of a McMansion.
Looks like Stan has done well for himself.
A late model black Mercedes occupied the driveway. They got out and walked up to the front door. Black iron railings flanked red paver steps. Ornamental plants and precisely trimmed shrubs screamed professional landscaper. Morgan reached for the doorbell, but the high-pitched yapping of small dogs announced their arrival before she pressed the button. The front door opened. A slim, fit man in his late 50s scooped up a tiny mop of a dog.
Quiet, Ginger.
He raised his eyes.
Can I help you? I'm Lance Kruger.
Lance said.
Oh.
Stan's eyes widened. He swept a hand into the house.
Please, come in.
A second dog darted from behind his legs and snapped at Lance's pant leg. Stan blocked it with his foot, then picked it up with his other hand. He stepped back and gestured with his head for them to come in.
I'm sorry about that. Let me put them in the other room. Go on into the den and have a seat.
He waved a dog toward an open archway and then disappeared down the hall. They heard a door shut. Morgan went through the arch into a formal sitting room. On top of a thick white area rug, two white couches faced each other over a glass coffee table. Delicate glass sculptures filled wall niches. Everything in the room was lovely and expensive. Stan definitely didn't have small children. Morgan settled on one of the sofas and took her small notebook and a pen from her tote. Lance circled the room, impatient. Stan returned in a minute.
My wife loves those dogs.
His frown said that he did not. He offered his hand to Lance.
So you're a private investigator now?
Yes.
Lance shook his hand.
This is my associate, Morgan Dane. Can I get you anything? Coffee or water?
Stan asked.
No, thank you.
Lance joined Morgan on the sofa.
Thanks for seeing us. We didn't know if you'd even be home. I try to take time off when I can.
Stan sat on the couch across from them.
Once tax season starts, I'll be too busy.
He smiled at Lance.
What can I do for you? I want to ask you some questions about my dad.
Lance said. Stan leaned back, crossing one ankle on top of the opposite knee. His posture was relaxed and open.
I wish I could help, but as I told Detective Sharp multiple times over the years, I don't know what happened to Vic. I wish I did.
There's some new information that wasn't available back then.
Lance said. Stan tensed.
Really?
Did you see the news yesterday? Morgan asked.
No.
Stan shook his head.
They pulled my father's car at a Great Lake.
Lance said.
What?
Stan straightened. His foot hit the floor with a thud and his mouth gaped for a few seconds, as if he didn't know what to say. Lance shifted forward and rested his forearms on his knees.
Apparently, that's where the car's been all these years.
Oh my God.
Stan brushed a hand over his receding hairline. Then his hand froze and his eyes snapped to Lance's, as if something just occurred to him.
Was Vic inside?
Morgan had interviewed hundreds of witnesses in her career. Her internal lie detector was well-honed, but she couldn't read Stan. She couldn't put her finger on it, but something about him didn't feel genuine.
No.
Lance shook his head.
But someone was. Do you remember Mary Fox?
Stan frowned. His gaze dropped to the wood floor for a few seconds. Was he thinking or hiding his eyes?
I don't think so.
She worked at PJ's. Morgan prompted.
Oh.
Stan's gaze snapped to Lance's.
There was a waitress at PJ's named Mary. Was that her?
Lance dropped his joined hands between his knees.
Now, do you remember her?
Yes.
Stan said. He held eye contact for a couple of seconds, then looked away.
I didn't know her last name. Mary was memorable, all right. Vic and Brian and I used to meet for a beer at PJ's. Sometimes she waited on us.
Why was she memorable? Morgan asked. Until Mary's name had entered the conversation, Stan's responses had almost felt rehearsed. Now he seemed far less comfortable. Stan glanced from Morgan to Lance. His hands went in front of his chest and he made a cupping gesture.
Frankly, she was stacked and she wasn't shy about it.
In what way? Morgan pressed.
She used to lean way over when she put a drink down on the table. It was impossible not to notice. They were in your face.
A flush brightened Stan's face.
She had a reputation for being friendly, if you know what I mean.
Morgan had a vague idea. Could you be more specific? The red of Stan's cheeks deepened.
She slept around. Once I saw her giving a guy a blowjob in the parking lot. Rumor had it, if she was in the right mood and the electric bill was late, she'd do anything for anybody for $50.
Sadness filled Morgan, thinking of a 21-year-old waitress trading sex to ward off the power company.
She was a prostitute?
Lance asked.
I don't know.
Stan waved away the question, then his hand froze in midair.
I guess she kind of was. I didn't really think about it like that. You think hooker, you have a certain image in your head of a woman out walking the streets in spandex and high heels.
Lance shifted his weight.
Did you ever?
No. Stan shook his head. I was never into sloppy seconds.
He winced and shot Morgan an apologetic smile.
But some guys don't care.
Morgan asked the hard question. Did Vic ever hook up with Mary?
No,
Stan said, relaxing again.
I can't picture Vic ever doing anything like that.
Did you see anyone taking particular interest in Mary in those days before Vic disappeared?
Lance's face remained impassive, and Morgan wondered how he was keeping it all in. She wouldn't want to have this type of conversation about her late father.
Plenty of guys took her up on her offers.
Stan shrugged.
I don't remember any specific names.
Don't know or won't say. Did you know anything about Mary's personal life? Morgan asked. Stan shook his head.
No, I'm ashamed to say we thought of her as Slutty Mary. But looking back, I see her now as a sad case. She had no self-esteem.
Stan examined his fingernails for a few seconds.
It's funny how age and life changes your perspective.
It is. Morgan agreed. What about Vic? Was anything going on with him in the weeks that preceded his disappearance? Stan's gaze flickered to Lance.
Your dad was worried about your mom. Her behavior was becoming more and more erratic. She was missing work and spending money like crazy. Vic spent a lot of time managing her. We used to play in a men's baseball league. Vic quit the team a few weeks before. He said he couldn't be away from home. He told me he felt like he was treading water 20 miles out to sea. If he stopped, he'd drown.
In your opinion, is there any chance my father left?
Lance's mouth pressed flat.
Maybe he just couldn't take the stress anymore.
Stan considered the question.
No. I don't think he would have walked away from you.
For once, Stan's statement rang with truth.
Was he suicidal?
Lance's voice dropped as if he didn't want to ask the question.
I have no doubt that Vic was depressed. But again, you kept him going. He once told me that if it hadn't been for you...
Stan nodded at Lance.
He would have let himself go under.
Lance's Adam's apple bobbed as he swallowed and sadness clouded his blue eyes. He cleared his throat.
Do you remember where you were the night my dad disappeared?
Stan nodded and looked away.
I can't count the number of times that Detective Sharp asked me this question over the years.
Stan's voice shifted from the conversational to mechanical.
Brian and I were at the baseball field. We hit a few balls, practiced some fielding, but mostly we were there to drink beer and blow off some steam. We called your dad, but he said he couldn't come.
What time did you leave the field?
Lance asked. Stan lifted his hands.
Around 11. Your mother had left a message while I was out. She was looking for Vic. I called her back, but she wasn't home.
Jenny had been driving around looking for her husband at that time.
Thank you for your time, Stan.
Lance stood.
Can we call you if we have more questions?
Of course.
Stan shook their hands.
I wish I could tell you what happened to your dad.
Thanks.
Lance led the way out of the house and back to the Jeep.
Is it my imagination, or did Stan's statement about his whereabouts sound rehearsed?
It did, but remember, he's answered those questions many times.
You're right. Sharp kept poking at the case.
Are you all right? Morgan asked after they climbed into the vehicle and fastened their seatbelts.
Yeah.
Lance stared through the windshield.
I put my dad on a pedestal. I always thought of my life as two distinct time periods, before and after. Before was perfect, and my father's disappearance was an independent event that made it all go to hell, but that wasn't true. My parents had their share of problems before he went missing. Now I have to determine if those problems had anything to do with his disappearance.
Lance paused.
Or Mary's murder. We can't forget that a young woman died that night. And her death is somehow connected to my dad.
Chapter 14.
That's Brian Lead. He's a sales rep for a dental equipment manufacturer.
Lance recognized the man raking leaves in front of a Cape Cod-style house in a middle-class suburb. Morgan checked the photo in her file. How old is he?
Too old to be wearing skinny jeans,
Lance said. Brian had buttoned the tight pants below a small paunch. Maybe his kids bought them for him? Lance parked at the curb and they got out of the vehicle. The man stopped raking and approached them.
Can I help you?
Brian Lead?
Lance asked.
That's me.
Brian leaned on his rake, his eyes narrowed.
Do I know you?
I'm Lance Kruger.
Brian straightened.
Jeez, you got big.
Lance shook his hand.
This is my associate, Morgan Dane. We'd like to ask you a few questions about my father.
Of course.
Brian turned, gesturing them to follow him.
Come inside.
The garage door was up. He hung his rake on the way past a long, low car covered in a tarp. One corner had been folded up, revealing the shiny black fender of a sports car. Inside the house, a short hall opened into the kitchen. Unlike her husband, Natalie Lead wasn't fighting the years. She'd gained weight. Her blonde hair was short and streaked with gray. A blue apron declared her the world's best grandma. Brian introduced Morgan to his wife and then said,
Nat, do you remember Lance Kruger?
Natalie's mouth formed an O as she shook Lance's hand. Oh, wow. Didn't you grow up handsome?
He wants to talk about Vic,
Brian said. Of course. She gestured to the table. Please sit. I just made a fresh pot of coffee. They slid around an oak table and Natalie served coffee in dainty little cups with gold rims. Morgan sipped hers, her eyes closing briefly with appreciation. Natalie Lead set a thermal coffee carafe on the table, then went to the counter to open a cookie jar shaped like a rooster. She loaded the plate with cookies.
I try to keep in shape, but Natalie is just too damn good of a baker.
Brian's arms were muscled enough to suggest he spent some time in the gym. In contrast to Stan Adams's pretentious and aloof McMansion, the Leeds' house felt homey and warm. Knick-knacks, some of which looked like clumsy grade school clay projects, and photographs of children crowded the surfaces of tables and bookcases. Not a speck of dust clung to any of the clutter. Lance had been in the house before, a long time in the past. In his mind, he pictured a summer day, tables in the yard, balloons tied to the backs of chairs, kids running and laughing. A birthday party? But as comfortable as the house felt, Brian's occasional side-eye triggered Lance's suspicion. Are those your grandchildren? Morgan pointed to a pair of school pictures that hung on the wall.
Yes.
Crow's feet crinkled around Natalie's eyes. Her smile beamed with pride. Joshua is 6 and Kayla's 5.
And Natalie spoils them rotten,
Brian said with a hint of criticism.
That's my job.
Natalie shot him a look that said their marriage wasn't as perfect as Lance had imagined.
I'm their grandma.
Brian gave her a quick, irritated frown. Then his face turned serious.
We saw that the police pulled your dad's car from the lake on the news. I assume that's why you're here.
Yes,
Lance said.
We haven't heard any updates.
Brian lowered his voice.
They said a body was found in the car. Was it Vic?
No,
Lance said.
Did either of you know a woman named Mary Fox?
Brian stared at his plate, his brows lowered, his mouth set.
I don't think so.
Natalie shook her head. That name doesn't sound familiar.
She was a waitress at PJ's.
Lance prompted. Brian played with his fork.
There were several waitresses at PJ's. Can you describe her?
I can do better than that. Morgan reached for the tote next to her chair. Pulling it onto her lap, she removed a picture from the side pocket. This was Mary. Natalie took the picture.
I remember her.
She frowned as she passed it to Brian. Brian's jaw shifted as he took the photo.
Oh, that Mary. Her last name was Fox? Yeah, I remember her. Why?
He handed the picture back to Morgan as if he couldn't wait to get it out of his hands. Lance dropped the bomb.
Her skeleton was found in the trunk of my father's car.
Brian gaped. That makes no sense.
Did she seem to have a special relationship with Vic? Morgan moved her notebook to her lap and wrote something down. Brian looked away.
I don't think so, Natalie said. But I only went to PJ's once in a while. Brian, Stan, and Vic were the regulars.
Natalie cleared her throat, her lips pursing in a prudish frown.
I don't like to speak ill of the dead, but she wasn't a very nice girl. She seemed to enjoy flirting with married men when their wives were sitting right there.
Brian stared at his plate.
She flirted with everyone. That's just the way she was. Did you hear anything about her soliciting from the bar?
Lance asked. Natalie sniffed.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Brian winced.
There were rumors.
Did either of you notice when Mary suddenly stopped working at PJ's? Morgan asked.
No.
Natalie broke off a piece of cookie.
There were other waitresses. She wasn't there every time I went anyway.
No. Maybe.
Brian still wouldn't meet Lance's gaze. Was he hiding something or was Lance overly suspicious?
Like Natalie said, we wouldn't give much thought to a change in waitstaff.
Lance changed topic.
Did you notice anything unusual about my dad in the weeks before he disappeared?
Brian toyed with a cookie.
He was worried about your mom. She seemed overwhelmed all the time.
Morgan turned to Natalie. How well did you know Jenny Krueger?
Not that well. I invited her over for Tupperware parties, book club, that sort of thing. She didn't seem very interested in being closer friends.
Natalie gave Lance a pitying look.
I reached out to your mother several times after Vic went missing. She never responded, and I'm ashamed to say I didn't push the issue. I should have. I should have checked on you. I'm sorry, I assumed she had family or other close friends.
She hadn't. Sorrow filled Lance when he thought of all the milestones his dad had missed. He couldn't think of any more questions. Emotions and memories were clogging his brain.
Thank you for your time.
He and Morgan left the house in a rush, anger and frustration welling deep in Lance's chest. Morgan took his arm as they walked to the Jeep. Her grip was solid and sure. That must have been hard for you. He didn't answer. He didn't know what to say. She let go of him when they reached the Jeep parked at the curb, but she didn't drop the subject. Talk to me. Tell me what you're feeling.
I don't know.
For all Natalie's perfection as a mother, she utterly failed to check on a child who needed help. Morgan shut her car door extra hard. She keeps a perfect house, probably cooks every meal from scratch. But she didn't do the one thing she should have.
I'm sure she's not that bad.
Lance had an epiphany.
My mother never had any close friends that I remember. She probably did push Natalie and other people away.
Doesn't your mother have any family?
Not that I know of.
Lance said. Morgan tapped her armrest.
What?
He asked. For a guy who loves his wife's baking, Brian didn't eat a bite of his cookie. She stilled her fingers. Lying must have interfered with his appetite.
You noticed it too?
Morgan steepled her fingers. He was definitely lying.
But about what?
I guess we'll have to find out. His phone buzzed with a message from Sharp. Lance read it out loud.
Mary's mother's name is Crystal Fox. Sharp wants us to meet him at her house in an hour.
We should stop for dinner, Morgan said. How about that deli on Oak Street? Lance was too preoccupied to think about food, but he didn't like it when Morgan skipped meals. He turned the Jeep around and headed in the right direction. Maybe Crystal Fox would have the answers he needed. Chapter 15. Secrets. So many of them. Whispering in the woods. Sitting on the bottom of the lake. Threatening to rise from the past and grab him by the ankle. He would not go down. He'd worked too hard to cover his misdeeds. But frankly, there were too many to bury in one place. He thought he'd snipped off all his loose ends. But some threads had been pulled free,
He must cut them off immediately or they would continue to unravel. But which ends needed to be severed? Who remembered what? He couldn't risk it. They all had to die. Starting with. He drove past her house one more time. Not too slowly. He couldn't attract attention, not that he'd seen another car for at least a mile. He lowered his window. The sound of a dog barking floated on the morning breeze. He fucking hated dogs. A quarter of a mile down the road, he slowed the car, then turned it around. He needed a plan. No impulsive decisions, no acting without considering the consequences of his actions. He would not let one mistake ruin his life. No one could know. Ever. He could still see her mailbox, though trees screened the house from the street. He could park right in the driveway and no one would know. She was even too far away from her nearest neighbor for the barking dog to be more than a nuisance. Turning at the mailbox, he stopped just past a thick stand of pines. An old Aerostar van was parked near the house. He slipped out of his car and walked to the front door. A little dog barked on the other side of the door. Maybe he could talk his way inside, then surprise her. But she didn't answer his knock. The way the dog was yapping, if she was home, she was ignoring the door or in the shower. The latter idea excited him. He crept around the side of the house. Inside, the little dog followed his movement, yapping as it ran from room to room. A chain-link fence encircled the rear of the property. The gate squealed when he opened it, so he didn't bother to shut it. He waded through the high weeds to the back door. Donning a pair of gloves, he tried the sliding glass door. Locked. Cupping a hand over his eyes, he squinted through the glass. But the house was dark inside. He walked around the perimeter, testing windows until he found one with a broken lock. Someone needed a lecture on proper home maintenance. He eased the window up and listened. The only sound he heard was someone snoring and the jingle of dog tags. He boosted himself over the sill, landing in a spare bedroom filled with boxes and random junk. He stood still for a few seconds, but the snoring continued in an even and steady pace. With a tiny growl, the dog rushed his leg, grabbing his pant leg and hanging on. He kicked it with his other foot. The creature yelped but came back for another nip. The second kick sent it flying into the corner. As it tried to slink out, he grabbed it by the scruff of its neck and tossed it out the window. Out of sight, out of mind. His pulse kicked up as he slid out of the room. Adrenaline flooded his veins, giving him an instant erection. It had been years since he'd killed another person. How could he have forgotten the buzz? A floorboard creaked under his weight as he crept toward the master bedroom. The snoring paused and he froze just outside the open door. How could his footstep wake her when the dog's barking had not? Bedding rustled and he held his breath. When the snoring resumed with a snort, his muscles relaxed. He could feel every heartbeat in his chest, the blood pumping oxygen through his body. His limbs tingled, every inch of him more alive than he had been in years. 23 of them, to be exact. He peered around the doorframe into the bedroom. The moment of truth. She lay on her back, one arm flung to the side, her mouth open. Once she'd been attractive, but hard living had taken its toll. Sallow skin and stained teeth showed a lack of personal care, echoed by the bottle of gin and a glass on the nightstand. Maybe he was doing her a favor. She lived in a dump, she didn't take care of herself. She was squandering her life. But he bet that when faced with her imminent death, she'd fight to hold on to the very life she was wasting. There was only one way to find out. Crossing the room, he slid the rope from his pocket. The end was already tied in a simple noose. He shook out the loop. A tug on the ceiling fan convinced him that it would hold her weight just fine. Years of choosing alcohol over food had left her gaunt. A chair sat in front of a vanity, he grabbed it and positioned it under the fan. Easing up to the side of the bed, he leaned close. "Crystal?" he said.
She shifted in the bed. Her mouth closed and she swallowed.
Crystal.
He touched her shoulder. Her eyes opened. Confusion shifted quickly to alarm. She bolted upright. Her mouth gaped as if to scream. Not that it would matter. There was no one close enough to hear. But he clamped a gloved hand over her face and dragged her from the bed. He put her back to his chest and looped his arm around her body. She struggled, her kicks and bucks surprisingly strong for a slender woman of her age. But she was no match for him. He slipped the simple noose around her neck. No worries about screaming now. She stopped moving, paralyzed with fear. He yanked the noose tight.
Please, no.
She gurgled, the rope strangling her words, cutting off her air. Using the rope around her neck and the arm around her body, he lifted her higher. Her feet frantically sought the chair to take the pressure from her throat. Her head was just below the fan. He estimated the distance needed between her feet and the floor and wrapped the rope around the base of the fan. Before he tied off the end, he left a few inches of slack. She wheezed as the extra length allowed her to take a single breath. He smiled and kicked the chair out from under her. Her eyes went wide and her bladder released, soaking her gray sweatpants. The sharp scent of urine hit his nostrils. He stepped back as her body dangled at the end of the rope. Her toes stretched toward the floor, but she couldn't reach. Her arms and legs flailed, her movements violent. Panicked. Desperate. Her hands went to her neck, her fingers clawed at the rope. Her nails raked her own skin, leaving bloody trails on her neck. But she couldn't free herself. Death came in a minute or two, as the tight rope cut off both her breathing and blood flow. He watched as her face slackened. Her arms and legs stopped moving. Life faded from her eyes until she stopped seeing him. Her body swayed for a few minutes, then stilled. It was done. This must be what an addict experiences when he finally gives in to his urges. Was the rush of heroin similar to this? He should be ashamed. He should feel guilty, but all that surged through his body was satisfaction. He'd silenced her so she wouldn't talk. But he'd enjoyed every second of the act. It didn't matter how long he'd maintained his self-control. Deep inside, he was a killer. Crystal had been the first thread to be snipped, but there were more that needed severing. He backed away from the swaying body, savoring the sight. The cell phone in his pocket begged to take a picture so that he could relive this moment forever, but he resisted. Stupid mistakes could get him caught. Instead, he simply stared, imprinting the sight in his mind. His memory would have to suffice. A few seconds later, he backed out of the bedroom. He crept back to the open window. The overgrown yard was empty. He slipped out the window and back across the weeds to the driveway and his car. He couldn't pretend he hadn't enjoyed the kill any more than he could pretend that he wasn't looking forward to the next death. Chapter 16. If Sharp closed his eyes, he could picture everything as it had been in 1994. Jenny becoming more hysterical as the hours passed. 10-year-old Lance trying to calm her. He'd been just a boy, but he'd become his mother's caretaker that night. Sharp had helped as much as he could. His only other option had been to put Lance into foster care, and Sharp had seen too many kids destroyed by that system. In his opinion, unless a kid was in major danger, he was better off with his own family. They'd survived, but neither Jenny nor Lance had lived a full life. Until now. Until Morgan had entered the picture. It had taken Lance bringing a woman around for Jenny to see that her illness had a death grip on her son as well as herself. Morgan had made all the difference, and Sharp would be damned if he'd let Vic Krueger's disappearance put Lance's newfound joy in jeopardy. This time he was going to find the truth. This time, he would not fail them. But what if the truth was more painful than they'd ever imagined? Vic's car had been found in a lake with a woman's body in the trunk. If Sharp were investigating that discovery with no previous connection to the case, he might conclude that Vic had killed the girl, covered up the murder by putting her in the lake, and left town because of his crime.